This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to September 14th edition of Invest Talk. It's all about enabling the average investor to realize better than average results. That's our goal. We state it every day. I probably get boring to you, but we still state it. It doesn't matter if you're managing your own money or you're working with a professional. You know, as always, your questions are welcome during this 4 to 5 Pacific time. Or you can leave your questions in our 24-hour listen line if you'd like. 888-99-CHART, and we'll get to that in a minute. In recent weeks, $30 billion has left the U.S. stocks, the longest streak of outflows since 2004. Surprising, isn't it? $30 billion. Investors have turned to emerging markets in Europe and Japan. That money had not left all markets, just our market. So, does the U.S. stock exodus make sense? And that's going to be our main talking point today. Before we go any further, let's check our 24-hour listen line calls. It's open for your questions anytime you want to ask them.
Hi, I'm Donna from Beaverton, Oregon, and I listen to your podcast. My question is there a comparative advantage or disadvantage to holding stocks, individual stocks, in a traditional IRA over a Roth IRA or vice versa? And what are the ramifications when it comes time for withdrawal with the traditional IRA as compared to the Roth IRA if what you're holding are individual stocks? Thanks for your time. Bye-bye.
Well, there's an advantage having the Roth, okay, when it comes to taxes. The reason why is because in a regular IRA, you eventually have to take the money out, have to start taking the money out of regular IRA at age 70 and a half. So all the money in both accounts, Roth and regular IRA, all that investment grows tax-free except when you retire, except when you reach age 70 and a half and that regular IRA withdrawals are taxed and you're forced to take them out. In your Roth, you're never forced to take them out, and you're never taxed on the gains. So long-term, the Roth is probably a better instrument. Long-term. Now, why do I say long-term versus short-term? Because, you know, you need long-term to get some gains. You got to have the gains. It takes time. You don't get gains every year consistently. It's not like a savings account. So it takes time. And the longer time you have in a regular IRA or a Roth, the better. The longer in a Roth, the better. The Roth is better, in my opinion, because of the tax implications at the end when you start taking money out of the Roth. Okay, hope that helps. Does U.S. stock exodus make sense? That's going to be our main talking point today. But I also want to talk about a few other things. There was a survey on millennials. A survey by Lend Edu, which polled the millennials about investments. And I want to go over some of the numbers there. The myth of the recovery. I'm talking about the economic recovery. Why American households aren't necessarily better off. Even though we've had a pretty nice recovery over a pretty far length of time. And finally, you know who Diamond is? J.P. Morgan's chief officer there. Diamond calls Bitcoin, a fraud, and may have delivered the biggest blow to the digital currency. And I don't know if you noticed, but in the last couple 3 weeks, it's down 20-30%. Bitcoin, the value. He calls it a fraud. So I'm gonna share with you why and what he's saying about it. Anyways, those are things I'm going to try to touch base today. I got an email from someone saying that, you know, sometimes I talk about what I'm going to talk about. Sometimes I don't talk during the show what I said I was going to talk about. So I'll try my best, I really will, to talk about those items. Anyways, the market today, the Dow was up 45, but the Nasdaq was down 31 and the S&P was down 3. So remember, the Dow is only 30 stocks. For a broader look at the overall market, it's better to look at the S&P and the NASDAQ. They're broader indicators than the Dow. The Dow is very narrow on 30 large stocks. And The bigger the company in the Dow, the bigger, the more impact on the points. So if the bigger the company goes up or down, the more impact on the Dow Industrials Index. So it's kind of, it's market weighted. Anyways, let's get back to our phone now and take another question from our 24-hour listener line. 888-99-CHART is the number. Let's take this call.
Hi, this message is for Steve or Justin. My name's Adam, calling from El Dorado Hills, California. And I had a question on two stocks. I know you can probably only answer one, but I'd appreciate if you are able to answer both if you have time. Looking for a long-term investment, approximately 8 years. Just thinking about doing United Natural Gas Fund. The ticker is UNG. I've been watching it for a few years, and it seems like it's just been going down, down. I'm just wondering if now would be a good time to get in for a long-term play. And then also the other one, what's a good entry point for Berkshire Hathaway, the Class B shares? I'm looking for the same investment timeline, about 8 to 10 years on that one. I would appreciate what your thoughts are on it, and I love the show and look forward to hearing the answer on the podcast. Thank you very much.
Well, UNG is United States Natural Gas Fund. It's an exchange-traded fund corresponding to the change in price of natural gas delivered at the Henry Hub, Louisiana. So it's not going to go up unless natural gas prices go up. And I don't think it's a good bet at this point because there's so much supply out there. I don't think it's going to go anywhere, down or up. I think it's probably going to go sideways. Berkshire Hathaway, BRK.B. Berkshire Hathaway is probably a much better bet over 8 years, the length of time you were suggesting. Because Berkshire Hathaway, of course, is Warren Buffett's company. And from a pure investment point of view, it's like a mutual fund. They have a bunch of companies in it, and they're all good, solid companies, because that's the only thing that Berkshire Hathaway ever buys. And over a long period of time, that should work well. Should work well. So that's the one I would go with. I wouldn't buy UNG at this time. Nothing wrong. I don't want to tell you that UNG is bad. It's just that, you have a glut of natural gas out there. And we're finding more all the time here in the United States. We're exporting it. So as far as pricing, there's not going to be much price pressure, yet for some time. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and I'm glad you've chosen to spend this hour with me. Do you have a game plan? How do you develop one? Do you have questions about that? Let's hear from you. 888-99-CHART. How to get through? You can do it right here on Invest Talk. Chart. Let's go to James in Sonoma. How are you doing, James?
Well, I'm doing pretty good, Steve. I called you last week about a Vanguard bond fund. I'm still trying to figure out what to do. I'm out of out of kilter as far as equities to fixed income. Mm-hmm. So now I'm looking at CWB. It's convertible bond fund. I like it because it has it has some of the pluses of a bond and has a little bit more push than a bond fund and has some advantages of an equity. I was wondering what you think of convertible bond funds, and particularly this one.
Well, I think it's probably a decent idea, convertibles. And for everybody else, this is called CWB. It is exchange-traded fund seeking the performance corresponding to the Barclays U.S. Convertible Bond 500 MM Index. I'm not sure what that means, probably S&P 500. Anyways, a convertible is where you can actually convert the bond into shares of stock. And there's all kinds of rules and regulations depending on the convertibility, on when you can do it, at what price you can do it, and all kinds of rules and regulations. So it's probably not suitable for an individual to try to just do their own convertible because it's not that simple. So buying an exchange-traded fund, James, is probably a better idea. It pays 4%. And that's probably pretty solid. It's not like, it pays 8% and then they can't keep it up. 4% is much more doable. It has been running up pretty nicely ever since last November, since the election. And only had one pullback from 51 down to 49.50. And then now it's back up to 51 again. So this is not a bad idea. James, is not a bad idea.
Okay, that's good. I'm looking to put it in my IRA because, like I said, I'm just completely out of kilter because the stock market's gone up so much.
Yeah. Well, this will give you some protection of a falling market and also give you income. So it's not a bad play, James. Not bad. CWB.
All right. Thank you very much, Steve.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So I think it was $30 billion has been pulled from the U.S. stocks over the last 10 weeks. Okay, on the same period of time, $36 billion has inflowed into the European and Japanese stock markets and emerging markets. So that's where it went. Out of our markets into emerging, out of ours here in the U.S., into the emerging markets, European and Japanese stock markets. Now, does this tell you anything about our markets? Does it tell you that they're too expensive and they're ready to roll over? Well, going back to 2004, there's been a number of times where that much money has been pulled out in a short period of time, and the market didn't necessarily go up or down. So it's not enough to push the market up or down. So it doesn't mean anything to you or me, but it is interesting to note that much money has come out and gone into other markets. I think it's just something that we should watch. It's very unusual for that to last for any length of time. The longer it lasts, that amount of money being pulled out, the more worrisome it will be for our market. But I don't want anybody to take it as a signal. I don't know if that is. It's just something to note. You know, I watch everything I can, because I love doing it, first of all. I want to watch all the time different indicators, different sectors, different industries, worldwide, cash flow, where money's going and flow, in and out of markets, what kind. So this is all to try to give me some sense of what's happening. And even after that, you're still never sure. Never, never. And I do this all day long. So this particular stat to me is not meaningful yet. Now, if it continues, it will become meaningful. So it's something to watch. That's about all I can say about that. Something to watch. 888-99-CHART. Here's an interesting term you should know. What is a leveraged buyout? LBO, leveraged buyout. A leveraged buyout, LBO, is the acquisition of another company using a significant amount of borrowed money to meet the costs of the acquisition. In other words, you're borrowing money like you buy a house. You're leveraging your house when you borrow all that money to buy it. It's a mortgage. Well, think of it in the same terms of that. You want to buy a big corporation. You want to buy a big one. You don't have the money, but you can borrow the money. And that's called a leveraged buyout. The assets of the company being acquired are often used as collateral. So you're buying this company and their assets is being used as collateral for the loan. And along with the assets of the acquiring company. So your assets, you're a big company and you want to buy out another big company. So your assets, you're using that as collateral. And then also the assets of the company you're buying. Now, the purpose of a leveraged buyout is to allow companies to make large acquisitions without having to commit a lot of their own capital to slow them down from growing. Investopedia has a great dictionary, investopedia.com. This is Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley. This is all about your money. So get in touch with your questions or comments right now. 888-99-CHART, how to reach me directly at 4 to 5 Pacific Time on Invest Talk.
Hey, this is Ben calling from Fort Collins, Colorado. I am a sophomore in college currently, and I was thinking about starting to invest in some stocks in the stock market, and I was wondering what kind of advice you would give to a younger person that wanted to get started out, and how much you think would be a good initial value to start investing. So if you could answer that, that would be great. Thank you.
Well, if you're just starting out and you don't know a lot, I would stick with the indexes, buying the S&P 500, and you can do that using their ETF, SPY. There's several other ETFs that buy the S&P 500, or the NASDAQ, which is the QQQ. is their that symbol for that ETF. And be advised, don't be impatient. That's the biggest, I think the biggest downfall for young investors. They think they're going to invest right now, and then next year they'll have a lot of money. It's not a lottery. It's not how it works. The stock market goes up and down, but has a long-term bias to the upside. But there are times when it'll go down a year or two or three. So, or longer. There, you know, you can have it be in a secular bear market. But over long periods of time, the market goes up. So be patient. Understand that right now the market's a little pricey, a little high, and that therefore when it does pull back, it'll take a while. If you invested at the high, you're going to take a while to make money. What you could do is gather up about, and I would say about $1,000 to start with, gather it up and watch the market and wait for it to fall. You know, let it fall 10% or more and then go buy it. You know, there's no big rush. You know, I think too many people treat the market like some kind of slot machine. They put the money in and they should be a big winners coming out. That's not how it works. You put the money in, and if you think you're going to make a quick buck, that money will just, you'll lose it. You'll lose the money. It'll stay in the slot machine. So be patient. And I would buy an index to start off. It just makes more sense. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Love to talk to you. Let's talk about the survey. The millennials have been surveyed, and they were asked about investing. Basically, that's what they were asked about. Would they invest? How much they invest? What they feel about investing? 41% of them, and 41% of millennials, are investing in retirement through a savings account, and not by investing in the market. Not. 60% of millennials will not invest in the market because they are afraid of losing money. 60%. Even though, according to anything you analyze, the stock market over a long period of time has at least a 98% chance of doubling your cash over any 7 to 10 year period. 58% of them admit they are afraid of the stock market. Now, the problem you have there is that means, where are they investing their savings? In money market? CDs? If they're not going into the stock market, where are they putting the money? So if they are, they're losing buying power to inflation, even though inflation is, what, 1.9%? Yeah, but how much money are you making in your investment in a money market? Or a CD, for that matter. Virtually nothing. I mean, come on. I thought the millennials were smarter than that. I mean, as a group, I thought they were pretty smart people there. But, you know, the fear of the market is unreasonable. Now, I understand that fear. And there are times when, yeah, scares the bejesus is out of you. But that doesn't mean you avoid it. That means you understand how it works. All you really need to do is be knowledgeable how it works. Then when it has those big falls, you know not to panic. It doesn't do you any good to panic. As a matter of fact, when you panic, it does you a lot of harm, a ton of harm. So I find it interesting about the millennials. I wonder if that's true with every generation at their age. I'm just wondering. See, in my generation, when I was young, 30 years ago, 35 years ago, whatever it was, you didn't have the opportunity to invest in the market like they do today. First of all, it was very expensive. You wanted to buy a stock, it cost $200-$300 to make the trade. My first trade when I was 21 cost me over $200 to buy General Motors. And I'm talking buying only about $1,000, $1,200 worth of General Motors. That's how much it cost. So the stock market really wasn't available to young people back then like it is now, where you have free trades of buying anything. You have unlimited opportunities to buy whatever you want, not just stocks, but the exchange-traded funds. They've only been around, what, 10, in any numbers, 10 years? You can buy any sector, any index. Didn't have any of that. None of that when I was young. So I'm not sure why there was so much fear. Of course, I know the dot-com implosion and, of course, the 2008 recession. But think about it. If you have money in and still have money in from those days, you should be much better off by now. Investing is learning that never ends. What money matter would you like to know more about? Give me a call. Maybe I can help. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and you can reach me right now at 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues next. The process of investing is more than just picking stocks. Investing begins with savings, of course, and along the way, there are issues about taxes and then estate planning and on and on. KPP Financial clients have a ready resource of information about any and all of these personal financial matters. All they need to do is ask. Managing your money gets more complex every day, and there are more options than the average person could possibly comprehend. And when we're confronted with too many choices, research shows that people put off decisions, important decisions. Most times, that's not productive. KPP Financial's philosophy is the more their clients know, the more successful they'll be, and the more predictable their future will be. KPP Financial, serving the average investor, helping them find solutions. Now let's continue with the podcast. Now back to Invest Talk. It's all about your money. And Steve is here to answer your questions. The direct line, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Eric in Utah. I had two questions for you. One is a follow-up on the question I asked about a week ago about Visa and MasterCard. Steve said that, get into it on a pullback, but it might take 4 or 5 years. I was wondering what you thought about, instead of waiting for a pullback, perhaps selling a put, out-of-the-money put, or buying, maybe 100 shares and selling a call against that. Thinking that it's going to keep going up. My other question is about Smucker, SJM. It looks like it bottomed at the end of August. I hope it's a bottom at around 103.50. Looking like it's coming up a little bit now. It's up around 107. Wondering if you thought now would be a good time to take a position, for maybe a 3 to 5 year hold. So thank you so much. Appreciate your show. Bye.
Okay, if you're anxious to get into Visa or MasterCard, which are very good companies, we say they are, is just expensive, then go ahead and try it. I mean, and don't always think that I'm going to be correct. Justin or I, we're not always right. We can tell you if something's overvalued based on historical norms, but that doesn't mean it's not going to stay overvalued or continue to be overvalued. It could. So if you want to get in, you're anxious to get in, well, just get in. Okay. Now, I do like Smucker's better. SJM, Smucker's, and everybody knows that they make jelly jams, all kinds of food products, not coffee, peanut butter, baking mixes, pet food. Believe it or not, that's Smucker's, J.M. Smucker's. I like it because I think it's undervalued. I think that it's got a good value. The 5-year P.E. range is 14 to 27, and based on next year's earnings of $8.13 and the stock being 108, that's what, a 13, 14 P.E.? So right at the low range. Return on equity is 13%. I'm a little concerned that sales have been flat to a little bit shrinkage in the last year. But I know a little bit about what's going on there. I think that's going to turn around pretty soon. And while you're waiting, you're getting 2.9% dividend yield. And I also like that the insiders have been buying at these prices. So the insiders bought it at $110 to $120. That's what they were buying. And here it is, $108. So I have a feeling we're going to find out later that they kept buying. I think they have faith in what the company is going to do. And it's a $12 billion company. It's a big cap company. So I kind of like it at this price. It was $137 back in February. pulled all the way down. I think it's bottomed. Okay? SJM, Smuckers. Now, you've been reading all about cryptocurrencies, and of course the most popular one is Bitcoin. And everybody's, they're what, up 300-400% this year? Bitcoin, that's a currency. A currency that is in the ether, not backed by any government or any economy. It's just in the ether. That's all how I can describe it. Well, Jamie Dimon, who is the head of J.P. Morgan, says it's very much like the 17th century tulip bulb craze. Now, you know the book I recommended, which is The Popular Delusions, and the Madness of Crowds, is titled Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. It talks about, one part of the book talks about this tulip craze, where tulips were selling for gold. The bulbs were treated as gold. Gold. And they got super expensive for a bulb. Tulip. Don't ask me why, but that was the craze. There's the Southeast bond craze. There's other crazes. And he's comparing this cryptocurrency situation, and in particular, Bitcoin, as like that. He says, quote, Bitcoin will eventually blow up. It's a fraud. It's worse than tulip bulbs. It won't end well. That's what he said. So why does he say that? What makes him think that it's a fraud? Well, you got to remember, what currencies, what makes a dollar worth a dollar? What makes a yen worth a yen? What makes any currency worth anything? And really, what does a currency represent? It represents labor, right? Your labor. That dollar represents your labor. It also represents the labor of your community, your business, your state, and the United States. That dollar has a value because of the value that supports it, that's behind it. Why does our dollar have more value than the European EU their currency? Why is our dollar more or less valued than the yen? Why is our value more or less valued than the peso, the euro? Why? Because remember, they're valuing against each other because of the economy, the stability of the currency. So what's backing up cryptocurrency? What basis does Bitcoin have a value of $3,000-something per Bitcoin? On what basis is that? See, that's why they think it's kind of worthless. There's nothing backing it up. Now, you could say, well, our dollar has gone down in value over the last 100 years. And it has, tremendously. It has. Because we keep printing more dollars. But we still have the full faith. Remember on that? The full faith and backing of the federal government. Well, what backs that up? Our economy. What makes a currency worth anything? See, so these cryptocurrencies, they don't have anything backing them up. It's just you saying it's worth this much. Now, to some extent, that also is true with a regular currency. But there is value in it because of what's backing it up. Tell me what's backing up a cryptocurrency. Nothing. Very interesting stuff going on. That's why Jamie Dimon thinks it's a fraud, worthless, nothing. It's a nothing. It's what people think it's worth, and people are bending it up for no reason other than they want to. So that it's just kind of scary. Let's talk to Jay in Fremont. He wants to talk about gold. How you doing, Jay?
Hi, Steve. Steve, I have a general question. Is it good time to buy gold now, considering the scenario lately with North Korea threatening every 2-3 weeks? And even today, and is it worth investing in stocks now because of this North Korean situation?
Well, gold is a very good hedge against a weakening dollar. It's a good hedge against a weakening economy, or it's a good hedge against a stock market that might fall. It's not a perfect hedge. In other words, it doesn't go up, the stock market goes down. Not necessarily. It just tends to do that. It's a very good way to diversify. Long term, I don't think gold is a very good investment. It's just a very good hedge at times. And we own in one of our managed accounts a number of gold mining companies because of it, because we use it as a hedge. So is it a good time to invest in gold? I think gold is probably heading higher over a long period of time, but it's not a good long-term investment. The stock market is better. It has been much better. I use the example in the early 80s, the gold peaked at like $500 an ounce in the early 80s, $500 or so. And here it is, 2014. If it just kept up with inflation, gold should be selling for like $2,400 an ounce. What is it, $1,300 an ounce or so? So over all those years, decades, it hasn't even kept up with inflation. That's why I think it's a bad investment. Now, if you bought gold in 2000 and held it to 2010, you had a huge run. You made a ton of money. See, so there's at times that it does work very, very well. But I like it better as a hedge, and that's what we're using our gold mining companies as. Okay? Thanks, Jay. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Our complimentary retirement reviews are really conversations. It's informal, and the information flows both ways. I learn about your life situation. I offer you some ideas and how you can reach your goals. It can be done on Skype or telephone. And a reminder, I will be in San Jose on the 27th. And to meet people face to face, and that day is full. I cannot talk and meet with more people because my voice just gives out. But if you still want to meet with me, we'll set up a new time in San Jose. If you'd like to reserve a time, your hour, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab, and then Portfolio Review.
When you're taking too much risk with your retirement portfolio, it not only injects an extra dose of anxiety, it causes you to make emotional decisions. It's time to get in touch with your risk tolerance. The quickest way to do that is to take our award-winning risk analysis quiz. Just click on the InvestTalk tab on investtalk.com.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. This is Bruce from New York. Thank you for a great show. Several years ago, I bought Lyondell Basil Industries, symbol LYB, Larry Yearbird. I thought their conversion from oil to natural gas for manufacturing their chemicals would give them a competitive advantage. What I did not foresee was the decline in oil prices. Oops. So I'm reevaluating this holding. I have a small gain in it. It is slowly approaching the upper range of its five-year PE. On the other hand, it also yields 3.8%, so it might be a good dividend hold. I would like your opinion if this is a hold or a sell, and if a sell, what do the charts tell you would be a full value price? Thanks again. Bye.
Okay, Lyondell, LYB. It's an ADR, American Depository Receipt, meaning it's a foreign company trading on our exchange. It's out of the Netherlands. It's a manufacturer of polypropylene compounds and polymorphins and that kind of stuff, okay? It's going to make $9.39 this year, then down to $9.08 next year. So it's not going in the right direction. Last year made $9.25, so it moved up. And sales have recently peaked, but grown in the last three quarters. Before that, they were shrinking. So that's probably why we're getting that little run. It went from 78 here down to 94 in just a few months. That does pay a 3.8% dividend right now. And right now the PE is 10. And that PE will be about 11 if the earnings go down a little bit next year and the price stays the same. The range is 7 to 14. So it's not cheap. It's not at the top, but it's, as you pointed out, it's approaching. It has a great return on equity of 62%. This is a good long-term hold for the dividend. for the dividend. If you're thinking that you're going to get a lot of growth on it, you're probably not. It's a $37 billion company. You're probably not. It makes profits. It makes very good profits. It has a good, solid business. So if you were going to, if you wanted to take profits, this is the area you take profits. I think it'd approach $100. I think the fair value is about $100. I really do. I think that'd be a good price for it, for the company, if I was to decide to sell you what I think the price, fair price would be. And it's at 94 now. So it's not a lot of upside. What, about 6% more? Not a lot of upside potential. Time for Invest Talk 101, a lesson in everyday investing. Let's quiz you. Everybody knows cold, hard cash rules the market. Nobody pays more than they have to for a stock. So true value is determined by what people actually pay for the stock. Is that true or false? Is the true value of a stock is what people pay for it? The reality is psychology trumps logic. We need to track the emotions of the market to understand what investors are acting, when they're acting rationally and irrationally. They misprice assets all the time based on what is fair or long-term value based on earnings and other fundamentals of the company. So at times people think that the PE ratio for the entire market should be much lower, and at times they think it should be much higher. Right now they think it's on the high, they should be higher. Okay, but what you determine what is fair and what is right is only based on what we know from history. And every time someone says, well, now it's different now. Every time anybody says that, that tells me that the market is going to either run up or run down, depending on if they think the market's overvalued or undervalued, because it's never different. It's always the same. The value of stocks is based on their future earnings, how solid they are, what's the competition like for them. But long term, the overall market has a certain value that has been trading at for years and years and years, decades, century, over a century. So we use that as a basis of what's fair value. Now, if you want to talk about it more, just give me a call. You can ask questions. 888-99-CHART is the number. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley. We got time for your questions still. The last segment is coming up. We'd love to hear from you. 888-99-CHART. You can reach us right now.
Hi, Stephen Justin. This is Pete from sunny Vegas. Got a question for you guys. I heard of a new investment. Maybe it's not new, but it's new to me. It's called a unit investment trust. Now, let me kind of give you a little bit of background on myself. I have a regular brokerage and an IRA with Scottrade. So although I can call them up, I don't want to sound like I'm totally ignorant. I have no idea what a unit investment trust is. I'm not looking for a specific recommendation. I'm just trying to understand the concept, and is it sold through normal brokerages, kind of like with a regular commission or something else? Love the show. Take care, guys. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Well, those UTIs, unit investment trusts, were very popular in the late 1990s, and they were kind of popular because there was very few ETFs. But a unit investment trust acted similarly to an ETF. A unit investment trust was issued like a stock, and inside the UTI would be holdings of different companies, public companies. And the way I remember them, because I haven't looked into them in so many years, but the way I remember them is that they would expire after a certain number of years, 5 years or 10 years. And so the unit investment trust, would go in and buy companies. Maybe it would be a unit investment trust on large tech companies. Go in a bunch of large tech companies, and the unit investment trust would last 5 years, 8 years, 7 years, 10 years. And at the end of that period, they would liquidate the trust, and you get your money. And hopefully what they bought went up in price. And that was a unit investment trust, similar to an ETF, which the difference is in the ETF Now, they were also closed in. They weren't necessarily traded at that time, but they could have been. You could still buy them. But they were similar to ETFs, but ETFs tracked more of and when they first came out, just indexed. Now the ETFs are starting to track more and more thinner slices of the market, different sectors, and even currencies and commodities. So unit investment trusts have kind of gone kind of an old thing that's not new. It's not new whatsoever. But no one really offers them very much anymore. And you got to remember, you have to read the prospectus to see what it does, this particular or that particular unit investment trust does. So each one, kind of stands on its own is what it really does. You have to read it. Okay, you're listening to InvestTalk, everybody. 888-99-CHART. Let's talk about why Americans' households aren't better off. Why would you feel? You know, mind you, we've had a great recovery from our 2008 recession. It's finally gotten back to close to what we were, before the recession. The problem we have, the reason why I didn't bring this up, recently they reported that household incomes reached a new high, okay? A new high, I think it was $59,039. And the percentage of people in poverty fell to 12.7%. That was about the pre-recession levels. And poverty fell. And the people who don't have health insurance fail. So in those measures, why aren't we feeling better? The reason why is because, it went to $59,039 inflation adjusted. Yeah. But that means it's the same for almost just finally after almost 20 years reached the peak. Because this peaked back in, the 1989, 88 area. Okay, so now it exceeded that peak. Oh, wait a minute. For 20 years, we didn't get nothing. And now from then to here, you're just a tad above where you were. That's why you don't feel wealthy or feel better off. That's one of the reasons. And some of the problems with some of these numbers, they're not all these. One of the problems is that the way the Census Bureau counts, they changed it in 1999. So it's really got to equal back that past high. The way they changed it's about $1,300 more. So we're still behind the way they used to count in the old days. Anyway, time's up for the hour. A reminder to check out our newly designed InvestTalk Insider section on InvestTalk.com. It's a one-stop place to keep up on financial news and help articles from brand sources. A lot of interesting articles. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody in the KPP family, thank you for being with us. And do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.